This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Now time for the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050. WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. The MGO Blog Roundtable is brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, a Michigan man, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTK.com. We're live here inside the Ibden Studios. You know we do on Mondays, the MGO Blog Roundtable.
Thursdays.
Yes, that's right. It is Thursday. My wife threw me off. as I'm trying to text talk at the same time.
Throw her under the bus, Sam. Good job.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Ira just told me, your wife said your phone isn't ringing. Well, it shouldn't ring when I'm on the air. So I'm trying to text.
That's a good point.
Right. So, MGO Blog Roundtable, you know how we do it on Thursdays, top of the nine. The guys come in, the trio. Starting off with Brian Cook right across from me from MGO Blog. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Monday.
Craig Ross, how are you this morning?
I'm okay. The Pistons rant reminded me of Operation Paperclip, which we all know was when the United States at the end of World War II tried to snap up in a fight with the Soviets various German assets.
Yeah.
And we ended up with Wernher von Braun to run, which worked out okay, I guess.
Yeah,
it also
good.
Let Tom Lehrer do a very funny song. You may think I'm hypocritical. I just say I'm apolitical. But it also ended up with Gerhard Galen, who paid $1 million a year to run a fake spy operation in the Soviet Union. Now, Galen convinced the United States he actually had spies in the Soviet Union. He didn't. But we paid him $1 million a year. That would be like John Beilein taking over the Pistons.
Okay.
It's a fake spy operation. Nothing will happen there. Does this make any sense?
No, it doesn't actually, Craig. Because the Pistons actually show up on a basketball court and pretend to run around a little bit.
Yeah,
those are the fake spies, apparently.
Yeah. But like NBA, yeah, but they're not fake because they're on the court.
But yeah, he's got a point that NBA coaches in like the bottom half of the league are just
there.
They're
just stealing money, basically.
They get $1 million and they're not really doing
anything.
What
does that mean for NFL coaches that are not in the top five teams? I mean, they're the ones that are truly stealing money.
Well, no,
pretending to work 8 hours a week.
The folks who are truly stealing money are baseball managers who just go out there and play good, guys. I guess
especially if they don't do any, you know, Bill James or data analysis.
Try to baseball it good.
Oh, the managers aren't doing any of the data.
Yeah. Well, they should know it.
They got the 20-something
upstairs. The ones that really steal are third base coaches. All you got to do is wind them around, right? That's all you do. Just turn the corner or get a stop sign. That's it. That's all you do.
You got us into a really stray place.
No, you did.
I'm pretty sure you did, Craig.
Oh. All right. Ed Fang, how are you this morning?
I'm great. I would actually love to, you know, do a statistical sampling of how much this sports show talks about the Soviet Union. Because of Craig Ross.
Right.
It would be a remarkable study that, you know, someone 100 years from now at the University of Michigan, man, there was this outlier sports radio show 100 years ago.
All right.
Spies.
So, guys, since we last spoke, Michigan lost its first basketball game. That has caused some to lament a loss in swagger, some to say this team isn't as good as we thought, or the offensive issues we thought they would have at the beginning of the season they're having now. You know, all overreactions. I won't say that it's a prevalent sentiment amongst the Michigan fan base, but some are expressing it. But this team is definitely in a shooting/scoring slump right now. Fortunately for them, they are super on defense. They are able to that buoys them. So in some of these, for instance, in the last game where they still didn't shoot a great percentage, they were still able to pull it out against Minnesota. But just your take on the last week in Michigan basketball, starting off, of course, with the Wisconsin game.
Well, you know, the offense is kind of the issue. Both the defense, the defensive performance, were both under a point per possession. They're fine. Teske is obviously rounding into the best center in the league. I guess Happ has a lot of usage, but I'd rather have Teske. I mean, just because he's so much of an impact on the defensive end of the floor. But he's been the only guy who's been at all efficient on offense, which is like I love the fact that John Teske had 15 points on 8 shots against Minnesota, but like someone else has got to like be like chipping in. So I the thing that kind of bothers me is that they get a lot of switches, and then 95% of the time they're just settling for the step back three off those switches. And you know, I want them to attack the basket, even if you're not going to actually get to the bucket against the switch. You're going to draw help. You're going to kick it around the perimeter. You're going to put up better shots.
This is like a preacher preaching to me right now. Yeah. I said the same thing watching Charles in particular. And granted, Charles and Iggy, they had, you know, they're horrible games for them. I think they're going to wind up being anomalies when you look back at the season as a whole. But in that game, I mean, the number of times they let Happ off the hook on defense when he got caught when he got caught on switches, it's like, man, attack that guy. I mean,
it wasn't even a switch. They had Happ on Iggy.
But when it was Charles, he was caught on a switch. And then he just, there wasn't a, let's get downhill and try to get in the paint on this guy and at least maybe draw a foul.
I mean, it kind of blew my mind that you're putting Happ out on Iggy and your response is not, all right, we're going to clear this out and see what happens. Because, like, if you get an early foul on Happ, that kind of changes the whole game. So, you know, Illinois was in a dogfight with Wisconsin last night, and a lot of that was Happ foul trouble, which happens when you're not at the Troll Center. And it's just, it's the grossest thing in the world watching Wisconsin play basketball. And they had a moment, like, a couple years ago where they were actually a fun team. And now they're back to flopping redacteds. So it's really frustrating watching. I was almost going to turn on the Illinois game off after like a disgusting flop from Nate Rivers. It's just, come on, guys. I want to see that section of Wisconsin practice, the flopping section, because they do it. There has to be a section of their practice where it's just like, all right, everybody flop like a fish.
Well, you know, I've played basketball. I mean, obviously, extremely low levels. But I played basketball for 60 years, and I tried to think about how many times I found myself on my back during pickup games or City League games or universe. And the answer is probably once in 60 years.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Craig. have never seen or been a part of a pickup game where a charge was called. Ever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Ever.
You don't do that in a pickup game. I mean, it's a different game.
Don't call charges in a pickup game, man.
Right.
You get laughed off the court.
Exactly right. But yet, and so they're shameless. I mean, they're laying on their back, you know, for two-thirds of the game. I mean, it's hard to figure out exactly why referees would.
That's the thing that gets me is, like, if I had ever seen a Wisconsin basketball game as a referee, I'd be like, these guys are trying to play me. And I would be angry at them, and I would foul Brad Davidson out in 3 minutes. I'd just be like, no, that's a block. So it's really frustrating because even when the refs don't buy it, like, it's still a difficult situation because you have a guy lying on the floor. So you're, as the basketball player with the ball who has a guy lying on the floor, you can't go dunk the ball because you'd have to step on the player. Like, it's not enough just to not call it. Like, if someone tries to take a charge and it's obvious and you think it's a flop, that's got to be a call. That's got to be a blocking foul. And it's really frustrating because a lot of the things that have driven me crazy about NCAA basketball refereeing has gotten better. So they've really encouraged challenging for the ball at the rim in the restricted area. You know, I think a lot of the changes they've made have been very good. Everything that doesn't involve going to the monitor, I approve of in terms of rule changes. But, man, this charge stuff, like, they've got it a lot better for a lot of teams. Like, you don't see Duke guy setting up right under the basket, but man.
Well, but I think, I mean, against Wisconsin, you know, I thought we played pretty well in the first half. Didn't hit a lot of shots. We're up two. And then had the worst half of basketball for this team the entire season. And, you know, what's going to happen? You're on the road. It's a good Wisconsin team. And then, you know, you come back against Minnesota and make a third of your shots. Still shoot horribly from the three-point range. So, you know, before the Villanova game, we were all worried about offense for this team, and then we kind of forgot about that as they went nuts against Purdue and North Carolina, and now you're seeing it drop again. You know, I'm not particularly worried about it. I think, you know, especially Brazdeikis, like, he's still getting to the rim. He's getting these contested layups. He's not hitting as many of them. His jump shot looks to, like, the same exact form as it's been all season, so I expect him to start hitting those. You know, Jordan Poole's had a couple bad games. I mean, honestly, the weirdest thing, he got, like, three or four shots in this last game, five shots against Minnesota. That's probably the strangest thing for me with that stat line. So, yeah, a little bit of a rough spell, but, I mean, I think it'll get better.
Well, three-point shooting is a concern, right? I mean, we're 3 of 22 last night. Over the last five games, we're at 27%. That's pretty wretched. And the looks aren't bad.
The looks aren't good.
Well,
they were better against Minnesota
than they were with...
I didn't actually... I mean, so most of those were at least semi-contested. Like, when I didn't really see Michigan get a truly open three in that
game.
Oh,
yeah, they did. I watched the tape again this morning.
There's like a subset of, like, I think five Big Ten teams which really, really endeavor to shut off threes, and Minnesota's one of them. But I was just like, they're not drawing help, and that you need to draw help to really attack, especially because you have Charles, you have Iggy. These guys aren't the fastest guys in the world. They're not going to just beat guys off the dribble very often. But if you put them in a closeout situation, they can really attack downhill. Like, it doesn't have to be something where you get an open three, but you have to give those guys kind of the advantage of not going up against a set defense. If they're going up against a rotating defense, they will slash it up. But just giving them the ball on the perimeter against not Ethan Happ, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for them.
It really feels like the availability of the big man, which most of the times is Teske, here lately, has really increased. Like, they are, as much as you talk about blitzing, you know, the ball handler in a two-man game, I think it's gone to an even higher level now. And you're seeing Teske benefit from that. I mean, he is available on pick and roll and pick and pop action. He has better hands than I knew he had. You know, if he can knock down a three or two, which he has lately,
he's up to 34%.
Yeah, that's a bonus. So I don't think that it's flukish that he's become this offensive presence for them. I think part of it is his improvement. I think part of it is the way teams are playing him. But to your point, Brian, I really think that for Charles especially, I think it's going to come back. We still saw Iggy. He came right back after a scoreless game, was super aggressive. He shot 4 for 18 from the field, but I like the aggression. I like the aggression that we saw.
Okay.
We aren't seeing...
What do you mean, okay?
Well, 4 of 18 from the field is like, all right, we got to talk about this.
No, but we do need to talk about this.
He had layups roll out.
He had a couple, yeah, but
and then of course his jumper. I mean, that's not his strongest suit. But his coach is encouraging him to shoot the basketball.
Well, so the only thing is, like, so in the final shot, you know, he puts his head down and he's like, "This is going up," and that's a terrible shot. And I kind of feel like that kind of happens a little bit more often than I would like it.
But it's to the point that you made about the Wisconsin game in drawing up that play. It's like, okay, get to the rim. Either you'll get a shot or you'll get fouled. And I think he put the shot up anticipating, all right, even if I don't make it, I'm going to get a foul. Now, he didn't get the foul.
Right.
Fortunately, obviously, Charles is there for the rebound.
I want Ignis with the ball, or I want Jordan Poole with the ball. And I thought when Iggy first went to the basket, he could have kicked it out to Jordan Poole, and that might have been a better look because the defense was switching around a little bit. But those are the two guys that are the most efficient offensive players on this team. They're the ones who should get it at the end of the game. So, you know, it worked out all right.
But what I want to see, and we'll come back to this on the other side, you know, Charles was really effective for the first 6 weeks of the season offensively. I thought a part of his game, a part of his in-between game, was that turnaround jumper. And it's seemingly, you know, just gone from his...
They missed what? Somebody said last night he'd missed 24 in a row.
Not turnaround jumpers, but mid-range shots.
Yeah, mid-range shots.
I mean, he hit one against Minnesota.
He hit one against Minnesota, and I saw it. I was like, man, you know, maybe that's a way for him to kind of find his footing. You know, I know there's a reluctance to dribble it all the way to the rim, you know, when that's resulted in some turnovers. But you can dribble into a post touch.
You know, because I doubt that Michigan practices feeding him in the post, but that could be a way for him to get some mid-range looks in a shot that I think is a good shot for him. Maybe not as good as the hook shot for X, but you could tell that that's something that, that Charles has really worked on, and maybe it's something that can help get him back on track.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to see him try to dunk it on people because he can do that. He's a super athlete and a guy who, you know, is a Kentucky transfer, which remains relevant when describing what kind of player he is, right? So he's a guy who, you know, I feel like gets into to the restricted circle and too often doesn't find a way to actually get it up at the rim. And I'd just like to see him be more aggressive. Like, I want him to commit a charge every game. Like, not like a Wisconsin charge, like a real charge. Like, this guy is... help defense, but I'm going to wreck his jaw kind of charge. Like, you know, so it's
let's pick it up on the other side. We got to get to a break. Come back on the other side. We will check in on the Minnesota game, talk about some of the other performances, X being a finalist for the defensive player of the year, rightfully so. A lot to get to here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket. So let's put this to the people.
Are we Craig the people?
Ross. No, I'm talking about to the people out there. Oh, we can debate this. We can debate this on air too, like we were just doing off air. But during the break, Craig Ross said, well, "I'll let you say."
I'm saying, okay.
John
Teske is the best center to ever play at Michigan, with the exception, of course, of Chris Weber.
True center.
Now, Weber might have not really been a true center either, but let's put Weber.
Juwan Howard, too. Juwan Howard played center.
Someone had to play center.
Yeah, they played together all
Juwan
the time.
Juwan was more of the center than really Weber was.
Throw Juwan in the conversation.
Take Juwan and Weber out of the conversation. I agree they're better than Tarpley, better than McCormick. Yes.
First round picks in the
80s. Yes. Not even close.
Better than Terry Mills.
Yes.
I can't.
When I watch Teske play defense, and I have the advantage of sitting right under the under the basket and watch the
guy. So you'll say he's the best defensive center.
I'll say he's the best defensive center.
He's the best defensive center, but that isn't even really a conversation. That's like asking, you know, who had the best skyhook ever. I mean, it's like, okay, there's Kareem.
Xavier Simpson.
There's Kareem, and then there's who? You know, and so Teske is so far ahead of the field, it doesn't even matter. I mean, and so, but I, when you add that to the fact he never turns the ball over, he's now at number 6 in the country in that. Yeah,
which is insane.
See, I don't want to make it sound like, I think John Teske is really good. I think he's a beast defensively, and I think we see a burgeoning offensive game. He can shoot threes in high school, so you know he has a jumper, but I've been impressed with his hands. His feet that we notice more on defense, but you can really see the way he moves. I mean, this is, you know, he is already a big part, at least lately, of what they do offensively. And I think it's going to be that way the rest of the year because of the availability that teams are conceding with Michigan's big man in their two-man game. So screens, slips, pops, he's going to be available for all of that, and he's shown the ability to execute each one of those. Now, you know, I depart from your opinion is when we start comparing him to some of the guys that were as good offensively as he is defensively. I mean,
like who? Yeah.
Like Terry Mills. Terry Mills could post you. Terry Mills could shoot a three.
Terry Mills was a great shooter. There's no question about that. But he's not as good a basketball player as John Teske. And I was a Terry Mills fan. I thought he was a nice basketball
player. You kind of know Terry, right? Because he's like the radio color guy.
I'm not talking Terry Mills, who is a great player. I mean,
I think Teske is good, man. I mean, we get just like you think Terry Mills, you aren't down. Yeah. You aren't trying to disparage Terry Mills. Just like I'm not trying to disparage John Teske. I think McNasty is really
he's the
good.
Big sleep.
He's big.
No, we need to talk about this because the big nasty one is taken. That is Corliss Williamson.
It's been appropriated, man.
No. And
I
two,
agree, that guy's like, still alive.
It's generic. Oh, come on, it's like everybody's like, oh, that guy's Big Nasty. Big Sleep. Nobody's ever been called the Big Sleep.
But,
and it is so appropriate for testing.
But you gotta understand sort of the genesis.
I do understand the genesis because you've told me about
it. Yes, I have, and it's so applicable to the rise that we've seen from him.
No.
Because
you got to turn it around. It's not about John Teske. It's about what he does to you on your offense. He puts your offense to sleep.
But that's not why he got the nickname, though.
I know.
You're changing the meaning of the
nickname. We're reclaiming the nickname. We're reclaiming it.
For those that don't know, I literally laughed. I admit it. I'm eating crow, pie in the face, whatever you want to call it, but... It was not this media day, but the media day last year. And we were talking to Saadi Washington about, you know, his bigs. And he said, you know, we have John Teske. We have Austin Davis. John Teske, I'm calling him Big Nasty. I was like, come on, man. John Teske, Big Nasty? What is that? He said, look, I'm trying to pull out of him this mentality. You know, anything that comes in the lane... you block it, you dunk. Let's hear some emotion. Let's hear some You know, we need to see him. We need to see him be more, demonstrative out there on the floor. That'll be a part of growing his confidence and his game. And we've seen those things. Now he's not going out, you know, yelling after every play.
Right. Yeah.
But it's there enough for you to kind of see. All right. You know, they pulled a piece out of him that wasn't always evident. So I think it's been a part of his rise, and certainly the rest. You got to give that kid a ton of credit from skill development to strength and conditioning.
Sure.
John Sanderson, man, good grief.
Yeah,
he wasn't supposed to try. He puts up all these other photos of all these guys. To me, his biggest success looks like John Teske.
Yeah, 30 minutes a game from a 7-1 guy. It's really impressive, but. Big Sleep is a great nickname. Big Nasty is just kind of like, eh. The Big Sleep is just, oh, that's such a good name.
I'm with you on this one. But in any event, you know, there have been some problems with Teske. I think, you know, Brian pointed this out in the Wisconsin game. A couple times he ended up on being checked by 6-foot guys.
Yeah.
And I felt he didn't work hard enough to establish himself to get the ball.
I mean,
it wasn't just guys not getting
him
the ball.
Post up, I think it was Trice once, and they didn't get it to him. And like, how much of that is on Teske, and how much of that is the fact that, you know, like Michigan, their reaction to that is not immediately, let's give it to Teske. Yeah. Now, that's kind of like the next step for him is like, how much of this offense can he generate without an assist?
So better than tractor trailer.
Oh, please.
Oh, come on.
Please. What are you talking about?
You guys make Tracker Trailer sound like he was a bum.
I mean, he was a big guy who offered no rim protection but had a cool dunk once. That's
But Tracker Trailer was he was a presence offensively. Now, again, like I said, we are certainly giving, I think, appropriate attention to what John has been, what he is defensively, and I think the best defensive center I've ever seen at Michigan.
Okay.
But I think maybe we are devaluing how much better some of those guys were offensively.
Well, Tractor Trailer was not that efficient offensively. He had a lot of turnovers.
Wasn't a good shooter.
Didn't shoot. Like, I don't think
that's... a lot of turnovers.
Terry Mills is going to be like, you compared me to Tractor Trailer. And you're going to be in trouble.
I just remember there's a Duke game. There's a game down at Duke that I remember Tractor Trailer being a part of that.
Well, I'm not saying he never had a good game because he had a lot of good games. But on the other hand, when you look at the body of his work, it's just not as good as John Teske. I
mean, he's also most famous for being traded for Dirk Nowitzki and not anything he actually did on the floor. The second thing might be the dunk he had at Duke, but number one is that he was traded for Dirk in the draft.
Number three we probably shouldn't talk about.
So,
yeah.
Only Weber ahead of Teske, but
yeah.
So it's Weber and Juwan. Okay, so Weber and Juwan, then Teske, and then after that, Terry Mills, Roy Tarpley, McCormick, Trailer, all those guys come after.
Correct. And it really isn't an argument. I mean,
so
really.
You're saying this isn't recency bias? Because Craig's not usually a guy for recency. Craig's usually the guy that is biased towards the old people. So I'm surprised that Craig has a recency bias.
In my day, you know, it would be Craig Dill, who I know is a lawyer up in Saginaw, who is a 7-footer. I think Craig Dill would say Teske's a better player.
So I'm curious to hear what folks have to say about this. I want to put it to the people at 734-998-1050 and get your takes. And we are already getting some calls from longtime Michigan fans who might co-sign Craig.
I have no idea.
We'll see. Let's go to him right now.
You better call Don and say I'm right.
This, by the way, this was not planned. Craig just threw it out during the break. Best center Michigan's ever had.
That's a typical Craig Ross statement, man.
Let's just be happy he's not talking about Trotsky.
Let's go.
We did get a call, and Craig, you can address this more because you saw him play. He was undersized, but Phil Hubbard was considered a center at Michigan.
Yeah, the problem is Phil was probably 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah, he's listed as
6'7". And he really, on that team, there wasn't a true center. I loved Phil Hubbard. One of my favorite, certainly 5 or 10 Michigan players who ever played. Way underrated. When he got hurt in Europe, it was a shame. He had a decent NBA career, but he wasn't really a center, so.
Let's go to the phones. I'll give you my quote. I said, man, Craig, this sounds awful hyperbolic to me. That we've made this determination already, but this is what the show is about.
Nonsense.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Don in Ann Arbor. Don, what's up?
My man.
Good morning. I've got a football question. You can defer answering it to later if you want, since you're on basketball. But for the roundtable, is there any reason to believe that we will see the extent of defensive changes, strategy, tactics, whatever, now that Campanile is on the staff in comparison to the supposed changes we are seeing or will see with Josh Gattis on the staff?
All right. So, what do you think of the center, best center in history, Michigan history? Question. You agree with it being John Teske?
Well, I am far from a knowledgeable basketball observer, but I'd have a hard time thinking that Teske was better, demonstrably better, than Terry Mills or Roy Tarpley.
You're wrong.
Does that work in court, Craig? Is that how it goes, man?
Craig Ross in mediation.
As to Don's question, I don't think you're going to see a huge philosophy change for Michigan's defense just because they added a couple of guys who are definitely position coaches. I think Don Brown will have to go back in the lab and try to figure out some things this offseason, but it's going to be Don Brown's defense and Don Brown's defense alone.
Yeah.
Well, all I can say about Campanile is I talked to Loeffler this week, and he loves him, thinks he'll be a great coach at Michigan.
Yeah, people I talked to say he's
a great guy.
DC.
An energetic recruiter. So,
I guess there was some thought that maybe you just turn the defense at BC over to him. I mean, they really think a lot of him. Really, were upset with the loss. So, I think part of it will be I'll be interested to see how they break things down on the defensive side of the ball. Does he wind up being in the secondary like he was at BC? I think that you look at his track record, the guys that he's made at Boston College in the draft picks.
Yeah, he's going to have a couple more coming up this year, too.
Right. And so, and then you throw in a Daxton Hill. I mean, you got some ingredients there that could lead to, some improved performance there, but you could have some improved performance, just by virtue of adding Dax. Right. Even if he winds up with linebackers and Vipers and CP stays at safeties, I think you're going to see just from pure ability, better performance there. You got better cover skills, better talent at the position with Daxton Hill going there.
So, Sam, you expect to see Dax on the field first play?
There's a transition for everyone. I mean, Charles Woodson didn't start right out the gate, so it's not like it would be a sign of him being overrated if he didn't start from day one. But I think he'll start he'll be a starter at some point in his freshman season.
Right. And where is he going to be? Is he going to be at the safety?
Safety. I don't think there's any doubt
I mean, you know, the what
well, he's an explosive athlete. I mean, you could see him at the Viper, maybe. Or?
He said that they've talked to him about Viper, but he said he's going to start out at free safety and with an eye on maybe down the line getting some time at Viper as well. And it's important. I said this on the site when I mentioned or when I added his quote. He talked about it. He said, I think eventually I'll wind up at Viper. You know, all Vipers aren't created equal. He would play Viper different than Kalik Hudson, right? You could do more with him. You know, his versatility, I think it would be situational. He could be a guy that could be a Viper on one down, could slide back to safety on another down, and you don't have to change your personnel. You don't have to, you know, bring a guy off the bench. When it comes nickel time, you know, this is a guy that can slide out and play over a slot if you want him to. So he just brings a chess piece type of ability to your defense when you decide you want to use him in that role. But I think they want him to learn one spot first, learn free safety, and who knows, maybe that'll be where he's at 90% of the time throughout his career. But even there, all the things you can do with him coverage wise just makes him he is so much of an upgrade. And I don't mean to say it that way. Like it's a, you know, but you guys get what I'm saying. This guy can really cover.
Gonna get some phone calls after this.
He can really, really cover. And so that alone is gonna make them a better defense once he gets his footing here in Ann Arbor. 734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@wtk.com.
Hey, Sam, before we go back to the phones, we got a couple of tweets, and there was an email in here as well. Both Wikidipedia 14, better than 3 mils. I like John Teske, but let's not get carried away here. And then JJ Mile, and he said the same thing. T Mills is better than Big Sleepy. We should mention Roy Tarpley was a 2-time second or third team All-American and a 1985 Big Ten Player of the Year. We should probably throw that out there as you're having this conversation
with your
recency bias.
I don't care. The guys who voted for him didn't see Tarpley. I saw every game Tarpley played. I've seen every game Teske played. I saw every game T. Mills played.
Yeah,
all great players. Teske's the best.
We got a tweet from a guy named Steve Taylor. Said Roy Tarpley should not be written off. I watched Michigan basketball since 1974, and until he was injured, he was and is the most fluid, quick, athletic center by far over any other Michigan center. Threes weren't an option, and dunking may have been prohibited.
I don't care.
I mean, I didn't see Tarpley play at all, so I can't really speak to that.
I saw every one of those games.
I'm impressed with Craig's mediation and lawyer skills. They're off the charts.
Hey, last night, here's a number. 14 of 54. What does that number mean?
2-point shooting for Minnesota?
No. That was Michigan shooting without John Teske. 14 of 54. Yeah. Teske was 7 for 8, wow. Including a 3 and including in a very, very difficult 2, catching the ball in an awkward spot, keeping his feet together, and making a nice 10 or 12 footer at a key spot in the game. Tarpley never did that. T. Mills never did that, ever.
His business card is going to have sports agent.
Yeah.
Hey, on it now,
John Teske, call me.
After your eligibility is over. After your eligibility is over.
All right, folks.
You stay away from him at those press conferences.
Don't call me. Don't call me.
And then I wouldn't call him.
Yeah, we got to get to a break, folks. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. My esteemed colleague, the counselor, Craig Ross, yeah. He who has seen Michigan football and basketball games for the better part of 6 decades, right? Is that correct?
Probably more than that. I don't know.
All right.
A long time.
So he proclaimed during one break that the best center outside of Chris Webber that Michigan has ever had was John Teske. Now, I love Big John. I call him Big Nasty. You call him Big Sleep. Terrific player. I think he's the best defensive. I'll give you this. Even in one half a season, I'll go, he's the best defensive center that I've seen in Michigan. But the best center overall, when you have Roy Tarpley,
yep,
first round draft pick.
Great player.
Tim McCormick, first round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Mills, first round draft pick.
Great player.
Tractor Trailer, first round draft pick. You got all these first round draft picks. And we're ready to go with John Teske as the best center of all time.
I'm staying with it.
Well, guess who's on the line?
I'm guessing it's T-Mills.
The guy who does the color commentary for the Michigan basketball games on the network, Mr. Terry. They call him 3 Mills. Terry, how you doing this morning?
Man, I'm doing pretty good, man. You never know who's listening from time to time, man. That's the fun part about radio.
All right. So, Terry, weigh in, man. Weigh in on Teske and where he fits in the pantheon of centers. And man, don't hesitate to throw yourself in that mix. I want to hear what you think of the matchup
between
Terry Mills circa 1989 and John Teske of today.
Well, you know what? I think John Teske is playing wonderful basketball right now. I think he has a ways to go before you put him in that circle of those guys that you mentioned, even myself, Roy Tarpley, Chris Webber, Tim McCormick. You know, he has a ways to go, and I think you've got to pretty much let that play out. Teske's bringing a lot of things to the table. The game has changed a lot. When I was at the University of Michigan, I wasn't allowed to shoot 3-point shots. Where the game has evolved, where Teske can step out and make 3-point shots. And, you know, I went on to set records in the NBA shooting a 3-point shot and things like that. I will give it to him on the defensive end. He is a force, like you said, on the defensive end. He's blocking a lot of shots and he's able to hold his own.
Yeah, all right, so
I ain't arguing with that.
How can you?
Not only that, as long as he doesn't challenge me like Joe Simon to some one-on-one game.
All right, so Terry, how good was Roy Tarpley? Tell me how good your game recognizes game. How good was Roy Tarpley?
You know what? If I had to weigh in, and to be honest, I would say that Roy Tarpley was the best. There was nothing that I could do with Roy Tarpley. I'm just giving it up to him because I can remember coming back in the summertime when we were at Chrysler and, you know, the guys that, you know, pretty much went on and made it, they would come back and we would have pickup games. And I just couldn't find a way to stop this guy. I was just like, he was unreal. You know, and he was having those excellent seasons with the Dallas Mavericks and, I was kind of like, I was in awe, you know, that how quick he was as a big man and how much a force he was. And, you know, I mean, I got better and better, but I would have to say Roy Tarpley was probably the best center at Michigan.
Yeah, and, you know, someone tweeted in about the limitations that were in place at the time, and you just mentioned one. You said you weren't allowed to shoot threes. That was a huge part of your game in the NBA. So if you were playing for John Beilein, man, maybe we're talking about Terry Mills being the.
That's right. There's certainly the case. If Mills was playing for a Beilein team, he'd be shooting threes, and making them because he could make it. So. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Craig.
I ain't playing you, though.
Yeah, that you are giving me some credit. I really do.
I'm giving you more than some credit.
Hey, Terry, I'd be remiss if I just didn't ask you. You know, we obviously this team is in a bit of a funk offensively right now, but still we're talking about an 18-1 basketball team. John Beilein throughout has been talking about the things they need to do to get better. What do you see? You've seen every game. When you look at the next step, the next level for this team, what parts of it do you think really needs to get better for them to take the step that we all want to see them take?
Yeah, well, it's going to have to happen on the offensive end. I thought they didn't execute down the stretch. You know, I could you know, remember them being up 10, and then all of a sudden I see people getting out of their seats leaving, and I'm like, where are they going? Because I've had an opportunity to coach at the junior college and, you know, watch a lot of basketball. I'm like, this game is not nearly over, and, you know, Michigan has not been in a lot of tight games, you know, probably double digits in most of those 18 wins, where they had to execute down the stretch and come up with plays and make free throws and things like that. So I think that's the next step, but you know, the biggest thing for them is that their defense, you know, no matter what people say, kind of keeps them in ball games when they're struggling on the offensive end. And teams never really pull away. You know, you don't see Michigan might go on a 5-minute drought where they're not scoring, but you don't see teams build a 15-point lead. It doesn't happen. They kind of hold it down until they kind of get their offense clicking. And, you know, the best part about that team is you don't know who you're going to get it from day to day. I mean, four or five guys are capable of, or maybe even six, at getting in double figures on a nightly basis.
Well, Terry, hey, man, we appreciate your time morning. Appreciate you giving the player perspective on things. And we appreciate you, at least when we talk about our, you know, there's a thing called you got to not swear on the air. And you didn't do it. You didn't do it, even though I know.
No, I didn't. I just wanted to call in while Craig was there and, you know, give him what my opinion was. You know, I thought he had a valid point, but. You know, in all fairness, I think you've got to let this play out with John Teske. You know, he has another year, but, I mean, he is very dominant. He's getting it done, and, you know, I hope he continues to have that success because, I mean, who would have thought that he would have been a force the way he is right now? And right now I've got him signed up, in my opinion, as probably being the most improved player in the Big Ten.
Gotcha. Great stuff. Thanks a lot, Terry. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Craig. Talk to you guys. Okay.
All right. See, no FCC violations, Ira. No FCC violations. I know when Terry heard Craig say, best center of all time, better than Terry. I know he had a couple swear words that he didn't offer up here on the air.
Man, I think Craig's more likely to break some FCC violations than Terry Mills.
I haven't done
He's
that
a pro.
Yet.
Craig's just a guy.
Well, that's true.
That was great. All right. Man, this is like... a typical MGO blogger out table. Had a ton of fun. I mean, typical in that I had a ton of fun. The first time I seen Craig get called out like that. Because, anyway.